Tom.
Hello.
Hi, Tom Griffiths. Podcast number 8, and we're talking movies.
We are.
I wanted to just go over what you wrote about why you didn't want to do songs.
Oh, because, what was it? Beatles and Elton John.
Yeah, nobody wanted to listen to you talk for an hour about the Beatles and Elton John.
Well, yeah, I've got quite a... I've had a fascination, I'll call it, with the Beatles since I was 14 years old. And it's getting a bit tired now. it's been 20 years.
I'm a bit the same.
Yeah.
I don't like talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like when you watch a Beatles documentary now and they go... You know, they've got Paul McCartney, they wheel him out, and he says, oh, yes, you know, I wrote that in John's front room. You're like, I've heard that story before.
Yeah.
No one else needs to hear it again.
No.
So.
Or when other people put that, and you go, no, that's not true.
Mm.
Then you know you're in trouble, and you go,
No,
that's not actually true.
Yeah, and he's never actually lived in Liverpool or met any of the Beatles, and was born after they George Harrison died.
Exactly, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's about as far as my musical tastes go. If it was sort of played on easy listening radio in 1974, I'm probably into it. So my film taste is probably a little less conventional.
We'll get there. The other thing I wanted to talk before we get into any of the movies, which was a good list. I enjoyed it. I thought this is going to be, it's a quality list, and a lot of them would be in a lot of high level movies that I like. But I just friended you on Facebook and noticed you have 1,000 movies.
Mm.
So what's all that?
Yeah.
What's all that about?
So must be almost 2 years ago. It would have been October 2011, and at night I like to watch a movie. I like to sort of download something legally, and watch it, and I'd sit there for hours. I'd be on Rotten Tomatoes. I'd be on IMDb. I'd be looking for something that appealed, and I'd struggle. So I thought, how about I actually set a little kind of a challenge, and watch one of those lists. So I went to some of the 100 top movies of all time. I thought, well, I've seen all of these, or I've seen most of them. So that's boring.
Yeah, the IMDb top 250.
Yeah, and I don't want to watch them all again. So I thought, let's take this up a notch. Let's go for 1,000.
Yeah.
So I'd searched around a bit, and I found this Guardian list of 1,000 movies to see before you die. And I liked it because it was just in alphabetical order. There was no ranking. There was no voting. It was just a bunch of film critics who got together and said, here's probably their top 100 each, and they just bunched them together to get 1,000 movies. And there was so many in there I'd never even heard of. So I thought, okay, let's just give it a crack. So I started watching them. I started with Assault on Precinct
13.
So the first 26 I watched were A to Z. And then I kind of had little themes. I'll do all the Hitchcock movies, and there was 19 on there. Then I was like, I'll just do some Michael Caine, or I'll do some Anthony Hopkins, whatever it was. I just kind of, the more I did it, the more I got into it. And I'm currently at 237, 236, somewhere like that. So last night, Battle Royale rewatch is on the list. I hadn't watched it yet since I started the list, so that's my latest. So at the rate I'm going, I figured out it'll take me 7 years total.
See, I thought it was your list. I was like, what, this is your top 1,000 movies?
No.
And I realised it wasn't in, like you said, it's not ranked.
And, it's mostly American, but there's, I watched my first Brazilian movie the other day. There's heaps of British, French, Australian. So it's a good list. And there's, some are just awful, but they're in there because they're cult classics. And some are just, there's some fantastic movies I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And ones that always said, I watched that, but I've never had that. I just need that nudge of having a reason to watch it.
Yeah, that's always the joy, isn't it? There's a movie you've heard of, but you've never got around to getting off your ass to watch.
Yeah, and it's been great. And the earliest one on there I've watched so far is 1915, Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, you never seen that before?
I had seen it before at uni.
Yeah.
I did a course on African-American history.
Yeah.
It's a real liberal movie, isn't it?
It's pretty intense.
D.W. Griffith, my namesake there, sort of flying the flag for civil rights.
Yeah, getting rid of, or getting some good blackface work for those people who needed it at the time.
Yeah.
It's one of those thing ideas too, which you know you see in a lot of things where that movie continues because its artistic merits far outweigh the horrible message that it portrays.
I was actually amazed at how much, because the first time I watched it was for study purposes.
Yeah, well, the same here. I watched it in film.
But watching it actually for enjoyment, all 3 hours of it was actually, I was like, well, there's some real interesting stuff. Yeah. And, you know, what's her name? Lillian
Gish.
Yeah, that's the one, the first.
My wife looks a little like Lillian Gish.
Okay, there you go. She's like the 1915 sex symbol.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, it was all right.
Yeah, the last scene of Jesus going through the cornfield or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little odd once they've cleared all the African-Americans out of there. Yeah. Again, like, yeah, you can't. You just have to go, oh, yeah, ignore that.
Yeah. There's a bit of that going on. But no, it's coming up on someone on the list is Triumph of the Will, so that'd be another one where I have to sort of, you know, discard some of my prejudices.
That's another one I watch at uni where you're like, oh, cool. And it's all just impressive to watch. Plus, and as you would know, like you're like, oh, this looks like Star Wars. You know that the end scene of Star Wars?
Yeah.
Is that get the medals and all that?
Is that where it's ripped off from?
Straight rip-off.
There you go. I've only watched the first 5 or 10 minutes of Triumph of the Will.
You know, all of a sudden, you'll just one of those things at uni, when I was 19 or whatever, didn't realise that stuff came from other stuff.
Is there a gigantic kind of, you know, hairy guy in the cinema?
No. That's the only thing.
Goebbels. with an outfit on.
Just with a carpet wrapped around him. But I don't know. I don't know about that. But you're all of a sudden, you'll just be like, wait, I've seen.
Oh
my goodness. Just the exact framing set up. It's awesome.
Okay.
But anyway, we'll move on to the first movie
real ones,
on the list, which is The Sting. Which you had a choice between that and Butch Cassidy. But I got the final say.
You did. The Sting. And that, you know, it's good. I mean, I've never been able to explain why both movies, both George Roy Hill.
Yeah.
Both Paul Newman, both Robert Redford, and I love them both, and I can't choose between them.
Yeah,
and you know, like they're just movies about, you know, what did I call them? Caper movies.
Yeah,
you know, they're like capers, yeah. And I've liked them since Year 10 English. My English teacher, whose name eludes me, her nickname is Jerry Medley. God knows what her real name was. She wanted to introduce us to a good 1960s film. Yes. So we did Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and I remember talking at length about the soundtrack and the framing of the shots. You know, the first scene, she's in kind of sepia tone or it's in darkness or whatever. And since I watched that at age, whatever, 15, I've just loved that movie.
Yeah.
And I watched The Sting a few years later and equally as much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't explain why, really. I mean, that's a bit useless, isn't it? Because that's what we're going to talk about. Moving as well.
I mean, both, like as you said, both of them have the same feeling to them.
Mm.
Like, I guarantee you put them on and just smile. You smile all the way through it.
Mm.
And it's every little detail.
Very pleasing, aren't they?
Yeah. The Sting was on the other night, and, you know, there's a few mates of mine who, if it's on TV, then I'll get a text.
Yeah.
And all The Sting's on, and that's my night.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know every single bit.
Yeah.
And it's still just so watchable.
It's,
I mean,
it's the shoes, the sound of the shoes on the... oh, there's every little detail in it.
In the alleyway, in the cobblestone alleyway.
Exactly,
alleyway.
Yeah. It's, that's...
The fact that James L. Jones' father is in it.
That's James L. Jones' father? Luther?
Is his name Luther?
The one at the start?
The buddy who gets... Are we allowed to do spoilers here? I'm sure we are.
I think spoilers the one who gets, at the start the of gets the movie, knocked off. That's fine, but spoilers to the end. Yeah, we'll leave the end of the movie alone.
it is. And it's that... I think, I mean, it's got to be the way that Redford and Newman interact. Yeah. I mean,
I think I wrote that down. Like the chemistry they talk about, usually between a man and a woman, but those two are just like...
Yeah, it's
pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, I love Paul Newman anyway in pretty much everything he's done.
Exactly.
Even Towering Inferno.
I've never seen that. I've never seen The Poseidon Adventure.
Apparently, he and and Steve McQueen
yeah.
hated each other's guts.
Yeah.
Because one was a rabid Republican, and of course Paul Newman was, you know, as left as you got in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I
did hear that. Didn't they fight over who his name was going to be?
I think they did, yeah.
Above
yeah.
the other, or
yeah.
Did they end up? I don't know. If they ended yeah. up side by side, or
they must, or yeah, sort of on top of the building, both names on a billboard. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, look, so the chemistry definitely. I mean, and Robert Redford is. I think he's better as Sundance.
Yeah.
Than as Hooker.
Yeah.
But he's still amazing as Hooker.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Do I think Newman's better as whatever his name is in the Sting?
Butch Cassidy and Henry Gondorf.
Yeah, Gondorf. The scene where he's in the carriage with Robert Shaw.
Yeah.
When he's pretending to be drunk.
Yeah, keep calling him by the wrong name.
Yeah, so. I mean that's a brilliant scene, and yeah. he, you know, he gets his they get his wallet and the whole thing. Like, that's just beautiful bit of cinema.
And it's one of those movies too. I don't know about you, but I never knew, the first time I watched it, I had no idea what was going to happen.
Mm.
Like you said, it's a caper movie.
Mm.
But there was something about it that made it different from other caper movies where you just have a feeling that everything's going to work out.
Yeah.
But in that movie, yeah. I never had that. Yeah. You never had that sense.
Yeah. You really feel like, I mean, there's the whole subplot about the, you know, the assassin that's after Hooker and...
Yeah.
And you're not quite sure where that's going to go, and you do get a feeling, I suppose, that their human weaknesses are going to win out.
Yeah.
You know, their greed or their envy, or their sort of lust is going to win out, and stuff up the whole enterprise. But that's all part of the game that they're playing. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, yeah. I mean, great movie. I'm not sure what George Roy Hill did afterwards.
He
did other stuff into the 80s, I think.
Yeah.
But those are the only two that have sort of stood out for me.
I don't know anything else that he's done either, but it's... I mean... Well, Redford and Newman didn't do too much else either.
No, I mean,
did they demand more money, or did they just were over it? I mean, I heard that... And again, this is just from a website, so it could be wrong, but I heard that Robert Redford doesn't like watching himself at the best of time, but only recently watched The Sting, in the last few years. Because
wow.
he was just like, oh, no, it'd be embarrassing.
Mm.
Oh, how good is it? Yeah,
that would be... I can imagine for many actors that would be the thing, wouldn't it?
You'd see yourself that huge as well.
Yeah, and you nail the back, or oh god, that was that day that, you know, I had that massive blue with such and such, or I wasn't at my best, you know, whatever, and all that backstory that might sort of colour it for you.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just anything. I have to re-listen to these podcasts, and sometimes that's horrible to do. Like, to see yourself on a screen and go, oh, I got paid all this money, and this movie cost so much, and all this is riding on.
Mm.
You'd be like, oh, that sucks.
Mm.
Yeah, I suck. But the characters too, like everyone in that movie, has like a depth of character too.
Oh, they do. I mean, the guy who helps with when they do the setup at Western Union.
Yeah,
I mean that's good.
Yeah,
and his whole bit where he's even to the degree where he's got the little portrait of his wife put up on the
that's right,
on the desk and stuff.
And just move it out. But
yeah. And, you know, like there's the goon, you know, Robert Shaw's, what's his name again? Gee, I can never remember character names.
Lonergan.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another nice thing. I've noticed that Robert Shaw pops up in a lot of my favourite movies.
Like yeah.
Jaws is another
favourite. It took me a long time to realise that that's the dude from Jaws.
Like, and from Russia with Love as well.
Which
is quite an eclectic bunch. And they're three of my top movies. So maybe Robert Shaw different. Maybe he's the key to my movies. Yeah. And yeah, sometimes he's got an Irish accent. Sometimes he's like a salty sea dog. Sometimes he's whatever he is, a spectre assassin. Yeah, he was quite an amazing actor.
But even Lonergan's like muscle in that movie.
Mm.
Just looks the part.
Mm.
Just has great... He doesn't do much,
but... The guy with the broken nose.
Yeah, with the broken nose. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, they just...
It's like he's been lifted out of the 30s. And like, let's use that guy.
Yeah.
Let's time travel him over.
Saw him in a photo and just pulled him out of it. But yeah, it's... The characters, the lines, mm. like.
Apparently, Robert Shaw had a fall before he played that part, and that's why Lonergan's got a limp.
Really?
Throughout, he incorporated the limp into the character. There was some sort of, I think it might have even been like a skiing accident or something. I don't know. This is, again, it's on the internet. Must be true.
Must be true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this will be on the internet, so we're just reinforcing that.
Yeah.
It'll be truer. But the scene where Redford finally meets Paul Newman too, that's probably my favourite in the whole movie.
Yeah. In the sort of carnival.
Yeah, and he's in the bathtub and he's just hungover.
That's right, yeah. Oh, yeah, and he puts the shower on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just says, yeah, you're a real horse's ass. A great line to say to someone.
That is a great line.
Yeah. So it's again, like you said, it's a caper movie.
Mm.
And it's like joyful. The music, of course.
Yeah. Scott Joplin.
Yeah. And again, I would love.
He was white, wasn't he?
Totally. Yeah. Ragtime.
Yeah.
I would. Every time I see it too, I'm always reminded that me and my mates always. Every time it was on, we're like, we should go to a barber and get a shave and wear a brown suit and get a shave
and then try and steal someone's wallet.
That's right. And see what we could get up to there. Yeah, you go, that doesn't look that hard. That grift.
Yeah. Grifting.
Don't let him get away. He's got my wallet. Poor auntie, he's got all my money. My wallet.
We got it.
What happened? Give it to me, please.
You get you with a knife? Hey, you sit tight, old man. You need a doctor. I'll call a cop.
No cops.
You want about the law or something?
No, it's okay.
Are you nuts carrying a wad around like that in a neighborhood like this? No wonder you got hit.
Thanks. I'm obliged to you, but I gotta get going.
You ain't going nowhere. Oh,
let me see. I gotta run some slots down in West Bend for a mob here. I got a little behind in the payoffs, so they figure I've been holding out on them. They gave me till 4 to come up with the cash. They don't get it. I'm dead.
That don't look good, Gramps. It's almost 4 now.
I'll give you and your friend $100 to deliver it for me.
I don't know. That mug that hit you is mad enough at me already. Well, what if he's around a corner waiting with some friends?
He won't know you're carrying it. Come on, you gotta help me out.
Hey, I'm sorry, pal. I'm gonna maybe help you get fixed up, get to a doctor, but I ain't about to walk in and no knife for you.
How about you? All you gotta do is to put it in the door slot. I'll give you the whole 100.
Hey, what makes you think you can trust him? He didn't do shit.
Hey, butt out, chicken liver. I gave him back the wallet, didn't I? How far is this place? 1811 Mason. Put it in box 3C. So you won't have no trouble. There's $5,000 there. And here's $100 for you.
Okay, old man, I'll make your drop for you. And don't worry. You can trust me.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's another part of the appeal, isn't it? Everyone wants to be a grifter at
Everyone
some stage.
Everyone thinks, I could do that. Well, you could just do that.
And it'd be completely safe. You know, it wouldn't get into any sort of trouble. It'd just be a bit of a lark.
Yeah. I mean, when I lived in England, I knew people that were like, Australians are always up to that kind of... the stereotype of being convicts.
Mm.
But he was like, people take, knives from weddings and things like that and put it in other people's bags and stuff like that. And he's like, where does that come from? I don't know. That's my brother does
genetic,
it all the time.
Yeah, genetic.
Yeah. But we're going to look at moving on from that to James Bond.
Mm, that's a good connection because we've got that,
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw.
Because you wrote down...
Even though we're doing Goldfinger, but, that's...
No, you wrote down both. I thought it was cool to talk about.
Yeah. Oh, so we're going to do both.
Yeah.
I think that's good. Because whenever anyone says to me, because I'm a Bond tragic almost as much as a Beatles tragic. My university, my honours degree, my thesis was on the political context of James Bond.
Really?
Looking at the Cold War context. So I was the only person who could go home from a night at the pub with my uni mates, say, I'm going home to do some research.
Yeah.
And buy a pizza and a six pack of beer and sit and watch From Russia With Love.
Yeah.
And then wake up hungover and look at these scrawled notes, think, yeah, that's valid research.
More pizza.
I'm a big Bond fan. Whenever someone says, what's your favourite Bond? It's like, what's your favourite Beatles album? I don't freaking know. So for me, it's one of those two. It's From Rush With Love or it's Goldfinger.
Yeah.
It's got to be a Connery for me. Although I do like Daniel Craig very much.
You do?
I do. I think he's excellent. And I like Pierce Brosnan. In fact, I even like Timothy Dalton and George Lazenby.
Yeah.
I like all of them because when you're a real fan,
yeah, You kind of James Bond.
Yeah, you're like, whatever.
Yeah.
Even the bad ones are showing another side of the character. But, look, Sean Connery's still the best. The original's always the best. And those movies, I can't pick between them. Like Sting and Butch Cassidy. Like, one day it's Goldfinger, the next day it's From Russia With Love. And I think I said in the email to you, look,
yeah.
To me it's not that they're equal movies, it's that they're two completely different types of movie.
Yeah, that's what I wanted you to talk about, because that was interesting.
And because whenever you see a review of a Bond movie, the person always says, oh, yeah, this is the real Bond. This is pure, gritty Bond. Or this is overblown, this is action Bond, this is silly, comedic, sly, raise an eyebrow, Roger Moore Bond.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of divide. And to me, Goldfinger falls into that latter category of, like, it's over the top, it's ridiculous but awesome. It's got, you know, the one-liners, it's got, a bevy of beautiful women, it's got, it's just, everything's big. Whereas From Russia With Love is much more minimalist.
Yeah.
And it's, and it could really happen. You know, it's real, and it's a real spy story. There's, like, you know, there's code machines and Bulgarian assassins, and, you know, like, it's real. You know,
yeah.
It could be a real thing that could have happened, and maybe it's a bit of exaggeration, you know, like gypsy women fighting in the camp. But,
yeah.
You know, and so, to me, they are the two different types of Bond movie, but they're made, like, 9 months apart.
Yeah.
You know, they were already doing pre-production on Goldfinger when From Russia With Love was wrapping up. So what's amazing is that they were filmed within a calendar year of each other.
Yeah.
And they're so different.
So, like, Sean Connery would have had to just go from... Like, it's almost like it's in a different movie, like a different series.
Yeah.
Going from, like, playing one character to playing a different character.
I guess partly it's because, I mean, like, so Dr. No, budget of $1 million. And I actually think a very good... like a debut for the character and for the series. From Russia With Love doubled the budget, $2 million. Dollars. Goldfinger, almost $4 million. So, like, it was exponentially increasing as the character became more established. And so they could do more with it. So maybe it's just the budget. Maybe they just thought, we've got more money, let's do more with it.
Yeah.
Let's have Fort Knox and nuclear bombs and, you know, private jets, you know.
Yeah.
But, but also, like, a different director. So it went from Terrence...
So then you've got a movie with, like you said, within 12 months, with a different style, totally different style, and a totally different director.
Mm. Well, the first director was Terrence Howard. And Terrence Young, and he'd started work on Goldfinger, and then they kind of... He had something else, he had another movie to do.
Yeah.
And he kind of, like, whatever, they cut him loose, and they got Guy Hamilton on board. And Guy Hamilton became the Bond director of his time. So I think he also directed You Only Live Twice. No, he didn't direct You Only Live Twice. He directed Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
And he also directed Thunderball, I think. So I think he did 3 or 4 movies. But he put that very kind of British spin, but also that kind of big spin, which became... Whereas I think... Terrence Young was going for the book.
Yeah.
You know, he was working with the book, and he's like... And the other thing I guess you have to think of is that Fleming was alive during From Russia With Love.
Yeah.
He died a month before Goldfinger was released. So maybe his death kind of liberated them, or his impending death liberated them a bit from sticking to the novels. And after that, you know, Goldfinger was 80% of the novel. And after that, there was hardly any that went back to the source novel to that degree.
Yeah.
So that kind, I guess that kind of released them a bit from...
And the characters get a bit looser and...
Yeah, eventually it's just the name of the movie is the same as the book. And especially because the books are pretty shit by the end.
Was there a book called The Quantum of Solace?
Yes. It was a short story. The only short stories left is one called Riziko. Yeah. There's Octopussy was a short story.
Yeah.
There's another one called Property of a Lady, which part of that was put into the auction scene in Octopussy.
Yeah.
It was the, is it the Fabergé eggs, I think? Was
Sonic's, you see, you are all over this, aren't you?
Well.
I'm not, I have no idea.
It's all that research I did no during idea. University.
No, like I've watched maybe eight.
So you're not a Bond fan?
I just, no. You know, like I have watched, For Your Eyes Only, maybe like eight times.
Gritty Bond.
Yeah, but I watched that like eight times. Mm. When I was a kid, I don't know why, maybe we had that like on video cassette.
Yeah.
And so I liked it. It was great.
It was always one of the ones that was pulled out like Christmas movie or something for some reason. I don't know why.
And which is weird. So I liked that, and I liked, I think, Thunderball as well. That was Sean Connery, wasn't it?
Yep.
It's like, there's no reason why I shouldn't watch all of them, but...
Interesting fact for you here. For Your Eyes Only was the first Bond movie with an actual official Russian government villain.
Really?
Mm. Before that, there'd always been rogues who'd like signed up with Spectre or something. So they're Russians, but so in From Russia with Love, Rosa Klebb is an ex KGB colonel.
Okay.
In the book, she's not. She's an actual KGB
colonel. As the Cold War stretches on, like, we don't care.
Yeah.
Insult the Russians. Yeah. Go right ahead.
Exactly. Well, you know, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
You know, Evil Empire, 1981. I think that's where it came from.
Yeah.
So it's funny, like, for two decades, it was actually, Bond was actually trying to preserve the status quo of the Cold War.
Yeah.
And it was only in the 80s that it became a bit more of a, you know.
Damn you, Russians. Yeah. But yeah, like, I watch, I guess, more Roger Moore movies. But again, I thought, I'll get back into them, but then... The Pierce Brosnan ones that I saw, I just were like, nah.
Yeah. I guess, it's one of those things, if you're not into it, you're just not into it.
Yeah.
And whatever they do to the character, it's... Because it is so formulaic.
Yeah, I guess, like, watching the Daniel Craig ones, again, this is a judgment without having to see it, is just like, well, is it just like watching the Bourne trilogy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is it just a spy... Mm. Movie.
You just wrote, a friend of mine always refers to Daniel Craig as the angry penis. Because he looks like, his body shape, head shape, he just looks like a big angry penis.
Just brooding all the time. Always sad.
Yeah. I mean, they are just sort of, they are formulaic action movies.
Yeah.
And it's only if you are, I guess, a sort of, I don't know, a connoisseur of the Bond pantheon or the canon, whatever, and the lines and the suits and the sort of the references. I think once you know all the different references in the movies, it becomes very enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't, you're just like, well, there's better action movies than this.
Exactly, it's just an investment into a character.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm very big on long series of movies.
Cool,
but not Rocky. I'm not really talking sequels here. I'm talking like worlds, you know, like the Star Wars, you know, like that sort of, where there's a world where there's lots of kind of connections and reinventions. And I mean, that's the beauty of Bond, is that, in the latest one, where he kind of, at the end of the movie, he's back where he was in 1962.
Yeah.
Back in the same office. And it's like, but that doesn't make any sense because, but you know, it's a different boss. But they can do that, you know. It's like,
yeah,
there's so much sort of
license. 50 years to draw on too.
Mm. Yeah. So I mean, I love all that stuff, and that self-referencing stuff is really cool.
This is gold, Mr. Bond. All my life, I've been in love with its color, its brilliance, its divine heaviness. I welcome any enterprise that will increase my stock. Which is considerable.
I think you've made your point, Goldfinger. Thank you for the demonstration.
Choose your next witticism carefully, Mr. Bond. It may be your last. The purpose of our two previous encounters is now very clear to me. I do not intend to be distracted by another. Good night, Mr. Bond.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond. I expect you to die. There is nothing you can talk to me about that I don't already know.
Well, we have to move on to another series, which a movie that became a series, which is Indiana Jones.
Mm.
Again, just an awesome pick. I was just like, yes.
I know.
I mean, talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark.
When you asked me my six favourite movies, it was really difficult. And I actually went to my... Because I'm keeping a list of all the ones I've watched.
Yeah.
And I looked at all the ones that I gave 10 out of 10 to, and there's like about 10 of them or something. And I've got lots of nines. So I was going, oh, well, that one, and that one's only got 9, but it's better than that one, and why did I give it a 9? And I figured out that the movies I've told you are movies that I could just watch again and again. And it doesn't mean they're great movies.
No.
But I could watch them. I could seriously watch, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark every night for the next 20 nights.
Without a doubt.
And just go, it's such an awesome movie.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, a particularly great movie in terms of, like, its artistic quality.
No.
But it's just a fucking great movie.
I think it has a lot to offer in artistic quality.
Yes, it does.
And you know what I think the key to it is? And it's the same as Star Wars, and my daughter's just started dressing as Superman and listening to the theme music again. It's the theme or the music in Raiders of the Lost Ark 2.
Yeah.
That bit where he goes into the... I was going to say the Well of Souls, but that's not right. Into the room with the Staff of Ra, and the sun's got to come through.
Yeah, that's not the Well of Souls? No, that's...
The Well of Souls is... Oh, it might be.
It's the... but the one where the sun hits the staff.
Yeah, and just the music in that is just so...
Mm.
I mean, it just takes me back to seeing it. And it was... Again, this could be a false memory, but the first movie that my family watched on a VCR was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Well, it's one of my earliest memories of watching a feature film in childhood, because I would have been... It was at 1981, so I mean, I would have been 2 when it was released.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it first came out on TV in Australia, like we lived in Darwin then, and I remember watching it on TV, so it would have been about, say, 1984. Yeah, because it took a few years for them to come out on TV. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I would have been at 5 years old.
I reckon I was the same watching it about 5 years.
And that's my earliest memories of film watching in 1984, so Ghostbusters and stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah.
So, for me, it's like, I guess there's a very kind of nostalgic connection because it's my...
And
a kid can enjoy those.
I know, I did think, that, well, at the time, it was released as a PG movie, which is unbelievable.
Mm.
People's faces melt in it. Yeah. Explode. And
there's like, you know, spikes go through people's skulls and...
The dude turns into the propeller of the airplane and just gets sliced up.
That's a good scene.
That is a good scene. Good fight scene.
Yes. Excellent fight scene. I mean, yeah, look, it's just... What can I say? And again, it's the world. It's the world of the character and he's such a great character.
Yeah.
I mean, and Harrison Ford, he's done some terrible movies. Done some turkeys, but that's just... That's a corker. And the biggest turkey amongst them, of course, is the latest Indiana Jones movie, which I've...
Well, I've never seen.
Yeah, you're lucky.
I know, I know.
I did the very tragic thing of turning up to its Sydney premiere with in uniform, in costume. you know, had the leather jacket and the hat, and I even had a torn kind of khaki shirt underneath. And I was sitting in the cinema. There's probably about 10 of us dressed like that. And... the girl in front of me was talking loudly to her friend. She goes, "Oh my God, so many losers here." I even saw one of them. He even had a whip, and I looked down at the whip in my hand. I thought, "Oh, she's talking about me."
Did they all beat you up afterwards? Like, you suck.
No, but we all went looking for bloody George Lucas to try and beat him up.
It just sounded terrible.
It was bad. But then when you think about it, like, you put aliens in it, but there was always a supernatural thing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
there's bloody ghosts coming out of the ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that was cool.
Yeah.
And if it's cool to have ghosts eating Nazis' faces, whatever they did,
exactly.
It's cool to have aliens.
Melding them and going through them. And,
So, I don't know. I think that it didn't work.
No. They just had to make a good movie. You know, passable movie is fine.
They could have just had 2 hours of Harrison Ford sitting in the outfit, just a monologue, and it would have been, wow, that's pretty cool.
And what was Marion like? Because I loved
she'd
her
aged,
character.
But she hadn't aged badly.
Yeah.
But she was a fantastic character.
Oh, I loved her character. Just the fact that you can have the first scene, you introduce a female character, she's in a drinking competition.
Yeah.
And the best drinker
in the
bar.
What I still don't know if it's a man or a woman that she was competing against.
I'm pretty sure it's a man.
I think it is. A Nepalese man, but... I still look at it every time.
I've never thought it's a woman. So
I look at it every time. Is that a really ugly woman, or is it a dude?
I have to look at that again and just go.
I still get confused.
Hello, Marion.
Indiana Jones. Always knew someday you'd come walking back through my door. I never doubted that. Something made it inevitable. So what are you doing here in Nepal?
I need one of the pieces your father collected.
I learned to hate you in the last 10 years.
One missed memory I always have of that movie, though, is the first time I watched it, I thought that the gold seal had gone right through the hand of the pig-faced Nazi. And never had it. It just made an imprint.
I used to know his name. That's how much I love that
Von
movie.
Von something.
Oh, he had a good name. I don't think it's ever mentioned. That's how much I like it.
And, but it's not.
It's just here.
So as a kid, I was horrified. After I first watched it, I couldn't watch it again for a little while. I was like, oh my God, this one with the guy with his hands got a hole in it.
Yeah.
And it was only like some years later I watched it again. Hang on, it's just a burn. Like, he's fine.
Again, yeah, that last scene with all the souls coming out of the arc and people's faces melting, exploding. That was a terrifying thing to see. Yeah. But that became a point where with the old VCR cassette, that was the point that got worn down from freeze framing
to
watch it in super slow motion.
Mm. I think it was done with...
it's all wax or something.
Yeah, it was stop motion or something.
Yeah.
Nick would know.
It's pretty ridiculous. Yeah. Though, like, you're like, this was in... I've shown it to kids in class and look at these special effects. And like, oh, that looks...
Yeah, cool. When I first started teaching, I regularly used the opening scene of Raiders...
Yeah.
To talk about the job of the archaeologist. And at the end I said, archaeologists don't actually really do any of this stuff, it's just a cool scene to show kids.
I'm sure at uni that's what happens all the time. They're just coming and go, all right, this is what not.
There's a kid in the back row with,
I love you.
I love you on the eyelids, yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you love that man as your teacher?
Yeah, he was pretty fantastic as Indiana in the first two and the third.
Yeah. But the second one hasn't aged
as well. No, it hasn't. Although the scene where the banquet scene still
and again, I showed students, like, you know, like these special effects aren't great, but look how messed up this is.
Yeah.
He rips this guy's heart out and it's still beating. Like, I watched that as a 10-year-old or maybe probably younger.
Yeah. Looking back, it is pretty full on.
I have heard Spielberg
gets away with it.
Yeah, I have heard Spielberg say, like, I don't know if he's marriage was breaking up or something, because he said, I was in a very dark place when I made that movie. You know, it's all like child slaves and voodoo.
Yeah,
And, you know, racism.
Because that was actually, Temple was one we had on VCR.
Yeah.
And that's one, or VHS, sorry, that's one we got, it's one we watched.
Well, Justine had seen Temple of Doom hundreds of times and never seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. So that was, I was like, why? How can you have not seen the best one? But she still has it, because that's the one you watch, that's the soft spot.
Exactly. I think there's a lot of that going on. You make those connections before age 7 and they stick with you. And it's often, and the good thing about Raiders, you go back to it on a regular basis. And a lot of those movies that you watch when you're 7, if you went back to them, there you go, it's been too big a gap.
Caravan of Courage does not hold
up. Caravan of Courage, what's that?
Seriously? You're a Star Wars man, and I'm sure you love to watch Return of the Jedi ad nauseum. You've never seen Caravan of Courage?
Never.
Well, you can't watch it now because it's terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Caravan of Courage was like an Ewok spin-off.
Okay.
Beyond that, I don't...
It was real Ewoks. Like, it was Ewoks. It wasn't like fake Ewoks. Like an Ewok.
Not a knockoff Ewok movie. No, real Ewoks. This plot, I can't really recall. Annoying kids get lost. Ewoks save them. There's a big, freaky ogre man that wants to kill them.
See, this is the thing. For some reason, one of the things this 1,000 movies list has told me is that I missed a big chunk of movies in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, I'd never seen Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
I'd never seen The Princess Bride.
You see, that's one I missed. And then
Everyone knows it. And people were horrified to never watch it. And I watched it as part of this thing, and I was like, well, it's okay.
Princess Bride.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But I'm not seeing that. Like,
people don't have the nostalgia.
Friends said, oh, it's the best movie I've ever watched. Yeah. Favorite movie.
That's the same thing. They could watch it 20 nights. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And it's because of that. It's those neurons that you fired when you were, you know, six and a half, and they stay.
I know what you mean. Like, I have the same with, like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that until later. And then it's the same thing. You're like, it's funny and entertaining.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
it doesn't have the same.
Yeah. So I don't know what happened. I guess you just have sort of 5 or 10 movies that you watch all the time when you're like eight, and you just miss all the others.
Yeah.
Yeah. So mine was Goonies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indiana.
Sounds very familiar.
Ghostbusters.
Must have been Neighbours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. They are. That's probably the three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. We could just quote them all the time. Well, we've got to crack on, but yeah, I'm gonna watch clips of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Definitely, as the night progresses, I'm sure. So that. The next one on your list, which was, again, a very pleasant surprise, and a big surprise that would be in the top six of anyone's list, which is The Aristocrats.
The Aristocrats. Which, it's funny, in no other setting do I say aristocrats, I say aristocrats.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but whenever I'm talking about this movie, I say The Aristocrats, because every single punchline in the movie is, of course, The Aristocrats.
Yeah, so, you're just going to have to give a synopsis of what the movie is about, and then explain why it's good.
I've got this list of quotes, but I won't go to them yet. Okay, so it's literally 100 comedians, or thereabouts, they say 100, talking about and giving their version of a staple joke, which all comedians apparently know. And I'd never heard it before I watched the movie.
Neither have I.
And it's like the jazz of jokes. There's a start, there's an end, and you fill in the middle yourself.
Yeah.
And so... the movie, I guess, is trying to dissect what makes the perfect aristocrat's joke. But the basic sort of layout of the joke is, you know, a family walks into a producer's office or, you know, director's office or whatever and says, we've got this great act, you know, do you want to sign us up? And the producer says, sure, what's the act? Then they describe the act and it's the most depraved, you know, it's got... shit eating, it's got, you know, vomit, it's got incest, it's got whatever the person decides to put in. And they talk about versions of the joke that went for 2 hours. And then at the end, the producer says, wow, that's a hell of an act. What do you call yourselves? And the punchline is, The Aristocrats.
Yeah.
And it's not even that funny a joke.
It's not a funny joke, but no, of course not.
It's like, as they say in the movie, it's watching the journey.
Yeah.
It's all about the journey rather than the punchline. And almost... It's how understated the punchline is that makes the story funnier.
Yeah.
I don't think comics should be that proud, quite frankly, about repeating a joke that's been going on since Bud Friedman opened the first improv next to the pyramids. You dig?
I don't think comedians told this kind of joke on stage. How many people tell jokes on stage? People usually have routines or they string together small, short observations.
I mean, you don't do jokes on stage ever. That's the total kiss of death because you're viewed as a big old hack.
You know the way those urban legends go? That people always knew somebody who saw this guy doing it. But I never saw anyone performing it.
It's the kind of joke that you love telling other comics. We would just tell them to each other, and it never had anything to do with our act.
It was just the kind of thing that you would share with the musicians.
It just remained in the business, swirling around.
A lot of the funniest stuff happened actually after the audience left.
We're different. We're in here. There's no rules. The headmaster went home. We got the dormitory to ourselves. Well, you hear this, you know?
I have a recollection of the joke being told at about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning for a bunch of comedians.
And you always saved it like a powerhouse. That was one of those toppers that you could pull out.
It was almost like a chorus of the punchline, you know? And what's it called?
But the jokes that we used to love telling and the jokes that I always loved were these jokes that have this body of performance in the middle.
It's a show-offy kind of an inside thing for performing comics.
Gary Shamlin told it to me, I think is the way I told it word for word to Emo, which is probably like playing the telephone game.
There's the basic framework, but then every comedian puts his own imprimatur on the joke and really makes it their own.
I don't know the standard telling of this joke anymore. It's lost.
Well, it's a vaudeville agent.
Jay Marshall is the definitive joke teller on that, even though he's not known as a comedian, because he is from the variety arts. Jay Marshall turns out to be the one who tells the Aristocrats joke for the Legman book.
It's the last story in the book. He gets the whole thing across in two or three sentences. The vaudeville agent is interviewing acts.
And the knight comes in, and he says, what do you do? He says, well, my wife and I come out and take our clothes off, and we sit on the stage, and the kids come out and wallow in it. He says, what kind of an act do you call that? He says, we call it the Aristocrats.
I mean, I can't describe why it's...
It's a movie, like, that's why I got you to explain it, because whenever someone says, oh, you've got to watch this movie, you say, oh, what's it about? And they tell you, like, well... How is that going to be good?
Yeah, exactly. And invariably, it's a movie that... I mean, I watched it once when I was drunk with some flatmates. And invariably, when I'm drunk with a bunch of new people, I say, hey, let's go back to my house and watch The Aristocrats. And I'm like, what's that? Yeah. And I describe it, and they're like, oh, should we just stay out? You know, like... And I've tried going back to... You know, by the time you get people back to your house and everyone's sort of... They're zonk out and they miss it. And it's not a movie you can miss parts, I don't think. Like, it sounds really simple, but if you miss... any one part, you wake up, you just hear someone going, and then, like, my granny's on the floor, and my toddler's riding a bike around and shitting on the floor, and you're like, what? And then you go back to sleep and wake up again, and it's about, you know, there's blood on the stage, and you're like, this isn't... So I think you've got to watch it in its entirety to really... and there's a lot of cutting between, you know, the comedians and it's funny, it goes up and down in intensity.
Yeah.
You know? There's some comedians who don't use a swear word, and then you got Bob Saget.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is amazing. I was like, wait, the dude from Full House is horrific.
Yeah, he's.
Oh my god!
It's actually quite. It's quite offensive. Some of the things he says, and you feel quite sort of sad for the whole cast of Full House. But he even refers to that himself and says, "Hey, you should record this and play it to the girls from Full House. They'll love this or something." But you know, it's got more offensive imagery than pretty much any movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, without a doubt.
But you don't sit there and go, "Oh my god, this is terrible." You just go, "Yeah, that's fine. That fits. It's all in context."
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm. It is the context of it. You can't be offended by it because they set it up very early on.
Mm.
This is what this movie's about.
Yeah. And what's nice about it for me is the firstly it tells you all. I mean, ignore the joke. It's about all the different ways you can tell a joke.
Yeah.
So they got a mime doing it.
That's right. That's amazing.
And he's great. He's in the middle of like a crowded street, and he's pretending to like fuck a dog.
Yeah.
And
the dude does it with a deck of cards. Is amazing.
Yeah.
You're like, so
there's a magician. Yeah, does it deck of cards, or does Penn and Teller do it?
Yeah.
And Penn's talking and Teller's not, and you know. And actors who, or comedians who are normally quite sort of, you know, middle of the road to me.
Yeah.
Like Jason Alexander, who his stand-up act probably isn't middle of the road, but certainly his acting career is.
Yeah.
And then coming out with like, you know, wow, he's talking about incest and using like the C word, you know. So there's a lot of surprises in there. And there's some amazing comedians that I worship, like Billy Connolly.
Yeah.
And ones that Nick Maniatis worships, like Robin Williams. And he doesn't really, and but he'll like that.
Yeah, that's for you. Yeah,
and but you know, like there's some really famous ones, and then there's people you've never heard of.
Yeah,
and there's a whole generation of comedians from like these 80-year-olds.
Yeah,
down to kind of the new wave who are coming through.
But it's I mean, you sound like the same as me. Like I love stand up comedy as well, and that movie's helpful in going, that guy's funny.
Mm.
YouTube. Have a look at.
Yeah, yeah. I've never encountered Gilbert Gottfried in
really?
Setting. Yeah. But
you know you have, but you just didn't know it.
Well, he was something in Aladdin, wasn't he? He was the genie.
He did Problem Child. He did lots of.
Yeah, he's done
movies.
Lots of voice stuff and lots of like kids movies. But
that's amazing when he says.
Yeah, the roast, the Hugh Hefner roast. Yeah. Coming straight off the bat of a September 11th joke. Yeah.
He explains comedy, stand-up comedy at its finest too, where he says, you know, I did a joke about September 11th. They all booed, and he went,
"Yeah,
what can I do to make this worse?
The Aristocrat,
and get them back,
back." Yeah, and I mean, and that's the thing. It does tell you a lot about the art of the comedian, and you see the different styles and the way that people's minds work, and it really does. It's a liberating joke. Like you, as I said, you see people who wouldn't normally swear go into some really dirty imagery, and it's like the boundaries have been moved or even removed in that joke. It's like, hang on, it's the Aristocrats joke. I'm allowed to say that.
It's and, just how far you can push it. That's what they do, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's, I mean, there's not much else you can say about the show, except the best bit is Kevin Pollack's Christopher Walken impression.
He does a podcast called Talk and Walken.
Really?
He interviews other people
as Christopher Walken. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
it's pretty spectacular,
yeah,
isn't
beautiful,
it?
Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
And that, whenever I try and impersonate Kevin Pollack impersonating Christopher Walken, it sounds like I'm from Pakistan, so I won't bother.
Oh, we should have just gone into that. I wish I knew that earlier. I would have said, "Give us a blast." All right, we'll move on to the fifth one, which is Battle Royale.
Battle Royale,
which I only just watched. I finished watching it today, actually.
So you've never seen it?
Never seen it, which is ridiculous.
Wow, have you heard of it before?
Yeah, of course.
Again, a movie... The common thread for some of these is that I used to go back and watch them drunk back in my uni days.
Yeah, nice.
I mean, look, I can't say I'm like a fan of manga and anime and Japanese stuff in general.
Yeah.
And the few Japanese movies I've watched have been sometimes incomprehensible to me.
Like Tokyo Story, have you watched that?
No, I haven't. But often I find, you know, a lot of the cultural stuff goes over my head. But the thing with Battle Royale is it's basically just a really simple story.
It's amazing.
And again, what I love about some of these movies, things like The Sting or, Ocean's 11 or this one, is the way the story, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a good idea,
yeah.
Well executed. There's a pun for you. And it doesn't matter where it could be Japanese, it could be anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just a great kind of, it's just a really great idea, basic idea that's supposed to be done really well. And
this is the movie on the list that I thought, why haven't I seen this?
Mm.
I mean, I lived in Japan for, two and a half years, and so many people, especially when the Hunger Games came out, kids at school would be like, it's like Battle Royale.
Yeah,
I'm
I
still got to see that.
And, you know, it's again, you can describe it really quickly. I mean, it's the early 2000s. Japanese society's gone to the dogs, and they decide one way to sort of punish the youth of today who are causing this societal breakdown is to send one class of them a year onto a deserted island where they kill each other for 3 days. Last one standing. If there's more than one standing, they all die.
Yeah, we've got collars around their necks that'll explode.
Exploding collars. What's that movie that has those in with Van Damme? The one where he's in the prison. It's done in lots of movies.
Time Cop? I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember. Terrible movie. Citadel? Fortress?
Fortress was Christopher Lambert.
Could be that one, yeah. I always get them mixed up. Lambert, sorry. But yeah, so it's so you got these 40 school kids, and a sadistic teacher had once been stabbed in the leg by one of them, and they're just given a backpack with a weapon in it, and off they go. And what's great about it is that it captures every personality type.
Yeah.
So there's 40 kids, and somehow amazingly, in what it's hour 40 or whatever it takes.
Yeah.
It covers every kid, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it shows a different reaction to this peculiar situation they find themselves in. So a lot of the boys are, like, trying to impress the girls.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're teenagers. And some of the girls are, like, taking out their jealousy on the popular girls. And some of them are trying to work together. And then the nerds are actually probably the ones who come really close to trying to overcome this thing. And
without
the
violence.
The loner, you know, trying to sort of, like, win it just captures every, to me, student personality type, and it shows the universality of school kids. Like, they're the same everywhere. And
doing the Japanese style of doing it is that they show the relationship sides, but it's downplayed more. If it was an American movie, there'd be just so much more of that stuff.
There would be, and that's funny how Japan mixes the cutesy with the ultra violent. You know,
that's the best scene in the movie for me, especially from living in Japan, is where they all wake up in a room and the teacher's there going, we're going to watch a video, and that chick's just like,
Genki, wearing a cap and hot pants.
She's waving to them.
Yeah.
And, hello, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah.
Tell them that basically they're all going to die in the next 72 hours.
This thing around your neck will explode. Yeah,
blow off your head. and then when the kids are whispering.
Yeah.
Or that's That's a beautiful moment. But, you know, it's yeah, and there are some weird things in it, like the whole way that the teacher interacts with that one student, and,
yeah,
and there's some stuff in there. I go, okay, that's very Japanese. That,
yeah,
that's going over my head a bit. But
that's right. That but, that is just.
But you know, it's it does sort of the characters are really interesting. They're all really interesting, and the fact they've all got a weapon is just a bonus. Yeah,
and the weapon's great. Yeah. I love the just, oh, what have you got? Oh, I've got this.
A pot lid.
I've got a pot lid. Yeah. I've got binoculars.
I've got an Uzi.
Yeah. I've got a tomahawk. But the thing that really got me was the whole premise of the movie is that the kids are all running wild and society is crumbling and so to punish the children. But in the movie, all the adults are messed up.
They are, yeah.
All the adults have either left their kids, just mistreated their kids, you know.
Desire sort of pedophilic relations with the kid.
So much weird stuff going on with the parents.
I guess it's kind of showing where's this really coming from.
Yeah, exactly.
But what I thought is when you see the kids that have been chosen, like 9E or whatever they're called, they're just... there's nothing that bad about them. They're just kids with petty jealousies and stuff. And you know, I mean, one of them alleged at some stage has stabbed
teacher in the leg. Yeah.
But I mean, I guess that one thing for me that hadn't really been built up properly is that sense of chaos.
The teacher going into class and then the class writing, "Well, we're all taking the day off." Yeah. That's unheard of. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But.
When's the BR Act being passed in by the ACT Legislative Assembly?
About this, nobody wants to watch that, do they? Sure.
What was weird for me as well is, I mean, seeing that watch them on the keyboards on the computer and the way they type, and the characters all change at the end of each line, and sometimes they change into Chinese characters, and then they use like Roman numerals, or not Roman, you know, like. Western numerals, and they use like for the movie is actually called Battle Royale, but just said in a Japanese accent, and that weird use of different languages and all those different influences. I find that quite interesting.
Totally different podcast. I can talk to you about all that stuff because that messes with your head.
Yeah,
and they talk, and like half of their language is English or foreign words, and there's no rational.
Mm.
They just throw this bit in, this bit's here. When you go to, like, a Starbucks or anything like that, it's all like that. It's all in English, which is just bizarre. Like, why would you put it all of it in English?
Yeah, and they all know the rules and you don't know them.
That's, like, yeah, exactly the conventions, right.
Yeah.
I guess it's the same anywhere, but Japan is even more jarring because you're like, well, some of this is geared for me. But then the pronunciation of Japanese is...
Mm.
is different, so they're saying the English word, but you don't know it doesn't sound like an English word.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's like I said, that's a totally different topic.
But you know, that's a way out movie that I'd recommend to people. So watch this movie.
Yeah, totally.
And it will affect you in some way. Like, even if, like, maybe not Goldfinger, maybe not Raiders, but this one definitely. You go, it's the
premise good idea, itself. Yeah, done really well. Mm. Like you said, from any country, as soon as you start watching, you're like, why hasn't anyone thought of this before? Just straight into it. There's no...
it's very quickly into the action, isn't it? Yeah.
They do a bit of backstory, but it's not that necessary.
Yeah. Mm.
And some of the backstory is jarring. Like, you know, well, that doesn't really help me out.
No.
But again, that's Japanese. Maybe more to do that.
Yeah. Anyway,
we're gonna come on to the final movie from Battle Royale, which is a shame because... good movie, which is Ocean's 11. Now, I wanted to read a quote. It's one of my favourite, a mate who lives in Japan now that I live with. And I said, you know, like, Ocean's 11 is, like, really good. And he said, I don't want to pay money to watch good-looking people having a great time with their friends. That's how he described Ocean's 11.
Well...
hello, Tess.
What are you doing here?
I'm out.
You're out?
The prison. You remember the day that I went for cigarettes and didn't come back? You must have noticed.
I don't smoke. Don't sit.
Now, they tell me that I paid my debt to society.
Funny, I never got a check.
You're not wearing your ring.
I sold it. I don't have a husband, or didn't you get the papers?
My last day inside.
I told you I'd write. Danny, go now before...
What? Benedict? How you doing? Whiskey and whiskey.
Danny.
Tess, you're doing a great job curating the museum. The Vermeer is quite good. It's simple, vibrant. Although his work definitely fell off as he got older.
Remind you of anyone?
And I always confuse Monet and Manet. Now, which one married his mistress?
Monet.
Right. And then Manet had syphilis.
They also paint it occasionally.
All right, I'll make this quick. I came here for you. I want to get on with my life. I want you with me.
You're a thief and a liar.
I only lied about being a thief. I don't do that anymore.
Steal.
Lie.
I'm with someone now who doesn't have to make that kind of distinction.
No, he's very clear on both.
You know what your problem is?
I only have one.
You've met too many people like you. I'm with Terry now.
Does he make you laugh?
He doesn't make me cry.
Of the 11, not many are good looking.
Mm.
Brad Pitt's good looking.
Yeah.
George Clooney's good looking. Matt Damon's pretty good looking.
Yeah. Julia Roberts.
Yeah, she's good looking. The grease man. He's lithe.
He's lithe. He's agile. Yeah.
The old guy, Sol Sal.
Yeah, Carl Reiner's not good looking.
No. Bernie Mac, not good looking. maybe 50-60% tops are good looking of the team. But they're definitely having fun.
And they're all charming ads.
They are very charming. It's funny that this came up because today I was sitting at home, middle of the day, baby asleep. At the TV on quietly, just had some lunch, and flicking through, Ocean's 11's on.
Oh, really?
Channel 7, mate, or 7.2 or something. But it was the old one. Never seen the old one.
Wise. And
Frank Sinatra talking to some other Italian guy about something. I was like, this
is rubbish.
The only similarity is they're wearing suits.
Yeah, that's
and bizarre. They don't even wear many suits in the other one.
No.
So I couldn't make any connection. They're in Salt Lake City for some reason. I was like, that's not even Las Vegas or Atlantic City or anything. There's no gambling in Salt Lake City.
Very bizarre. Yeah. Like, we'll remake a movie totally different. The last movie was really terrible.
Mm.
But maybe there's like one central premise to it.
So is it about the same thing or not?
The same. I've watched a bit of it and this is terrible. Yeah.
And Frank Sinatra's a good actor. But maybe not in that.
We talked about this in the last podcast, actually. Mm. How he's underrated.
He's very underrated. The Man with the Golden Arm is a fantastic movie.
Yeah. Manchurian Candidate.
Also good. Yeah. But, so Ocean's 11, it's Steven Soderbergh. So, again, funny, all these little connections. I watched Contagion last night.
Oh, right, yeah.
I'd never seen that. And that's one of his last movies, of course. And, it's got that Soderbergh style. I quite like the Soderbergh style of movie where there's lots of threads going on and they're all connected and, but he does that quite cleverly. It can turn out, you can have like the disaster movie style where there's 15 different character stories and just
gets messy.
Yeah. Whereas he does it, he pulls loose ends together quite well and he does the split screens and all that sort of stuff. And I quite like it. And definitely very kind of, bold style I hate Ocean's 12, I hate Ocean's 13.
Yeah, I never watch Ocean's 13, which I should watch, because Ocean's 12 was so dire.
Mm.
But I'm sure Ocean's
13 I think Ocean's 13 is marginally better.
Yeah.
But, again, it's how do you top the heist?
Yeah.
And I love a heist.
Yeah.
I
thought, we'll begin and end with a caper movie.
Yeah. Because, the heist, the grift.
Yeah.
The running away of Butch Cassidy, it's all that same sort of thing.
Yeah.
You're in a fix, or a fix you've created for yourself. You're trying to get out. And I love seeing how that's solved, and not using the not relying on the sort of the impossible coincidence, but actually cleverly constructed.
Yeah.
This
was the movie I was talking about earlier. Like in The Sting, I still didn't know.
Mm.
But in Ocean's 11, I just thought, I don't know what's going to happen, but that'll be fine.
But you know there's a plot hole in Ocean's 11, which I didn't realise after all the times I've watched it. How do they get those bags of leaflets into the vault?
Wow.
And Soderbergh said, "Yeah, you're right." Apparently, it's an interview, and someone raised it and says, "Yeah, you're right. That's a massive plot hole. They couldn't have done it." But or there's no scene where they're showing carrying bags of leaflets into the vault. But
That's gonna mess with my head now.
There you go. So there was a problem, but still, it's very clever way that's And again, what I like is that each character has their strength, and they're quite well developed.
Yeah.
Even though some of them, you know, like Don Cheadle's accent is so bloody annoying.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
It's the same. Everyone talks about Don Cheadle's, and they talk about Dick Van Dyke's and Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
I love them.
Jude Law's Australian accent is contagion. Yeah. It should just be a rule, like, to Hollywood actors, don't do Australian accents.
Django. Have you seen Django on Chain?
Oh, no. Who does a bad accent?
Oh, Tarantino.
What's he supposed to be?
Australia.
Oh, no.
I thought he was South African.
But, you know...
But that, then John Jarrett steps in, you know, like...
Tarantino was associated with Natural Born Killers, where Robert Downey Jr. did the Australian...
Well, that was another movie where I was, like, well into it, going, oh, he's Australian.
Yeah, he's Australian, yeah. Because Australians are always, like, journalists, bloggers, you know, ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah, in Django Unchained, like, it was the same. I was like, oh, he's South African. Yeah. Oh, no, John Jarrett. He's Australian.
Why do they bother?
What is that accent? Oh. That dude you're talking next to is Australian. Try and copy his accent. Yeah. You're doing something different.
Anyway, there's no Australian accents in Ocean's Eleven, which is good. But, I mean, look, there's so some people... Like, I used to have a real crush on Julia Roberts, but I don't really rate her as an actor. I love George Clooney.
Yeah.
Don't really rate Brad Pitt, but he's done some great stuff. I can see that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I love his Irish boxer in Snatch.
Perrin Bouchoux.
Yeah.
Caran.
And the character he does in Burn After Reading.
Yeah.
I really should like him. He's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's in Seven. Yeah, that's a good movie. So, okay, I changed my mind. He's good.
Tyler Durden.
Matt Damon. I used to hate Matt Damon. Matt Damon's actually... I actually really like Matt Damon.
Yeah, I think Matt Damon went through a patch where he's in Contagion. Good. Yeah.
Bloody hell, it's all related.
He didn't do anything good, and then I guess the last few years he's maybe a bit choosy with movies.
Mm.
But maybe Clooney told him that.
Mm.
Choose movies. But I heard Matt Damon say, like, oh, when they made it, he said to Clooney, like, oh, I hope this needs to be a hit because my last movies have all been crap or they've all...
Yeah.
And Clooney was like, hey, I was in Batman and Robin. You know, I sunk the biggest franchise so don't worry about it.
Yeah, you'll be right. Just smile disarmingly.
Yeah, exactly.
There are some great actors there.
Yeah.
But like, really for me, it's the story. And it's watching the...
Again, it's watching chemistry as well, isn't it?
There is a chemistry there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's watching that whole thing unfold. And again, thinking... I mean, I thought... How's this all going to come together? Like, you know, Clooney's stuck in the, you know, he's gone too far.
Yeah.
He's trying to get Tess back.
I booted him
out.
You
know, like, but you realise quite a bit before the end that that's all part of the game.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Sting,
that's what I mean.
It's like, much more, you have to go a lot further to the end before you realise how it's all going to come together.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's
really well written too. That's the other thing. Like Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Like the dialogue's, it's
sharp,
very sharp. Like the whole movie's sharp.
Yeah,
they don't. It's not over long. It's not. Not much is wasted. They probably shot a lot more stuff they could have put in there.
Yeah, and you do. It's quite nice watching a casino boss get done over. I guess you know, it's the villain you can easily hate.
Yeah, and he doesn't do much wrong.
No,
in the movie, he's just a dick.
Got lots of money, and he's going out with George Clooney's girlfriend.
Yeah. How dare you?
Yeah.
Win the girl back.
Yeah.
And then Even the ending, though, is not like a... It's not a massive triumph.
They're just standing in the fountain.
Yeah, they're just watching the fountain going, oh, that was nice.
Yeah, got $13 million each or something, yeah.
See ya.
Yeah.
That's it.
See you for Ocean's 12.
Oh.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, the search for more money. That's the same Spaceballs. But Soderbergh, again, like you were saying, like, I remember seeing Traffic at the cinema.
and hating Catherine Zeta-Jones?
No,
you quite like her?
She doesn't do much, really. But that movie, and a lot, and I heard it described recently, that Soderbergh movies, when they finish, you could watch even a bit more. I haven't seen Contagion, so maybe not with that.
But, no, it's actually quite clever.
But Traffic, I remember distinctly watching it and going, well, this movie's kind of long. But then when it ended, I was like, well, I could watch another hour.
Yeah.
It's two and a half hours or 3 hours.
Yeah. No, and what else has Soderbergh done? He did that, he did the one with George Clooney and...
yeah, he did Out of Sight.
Not Jennifer Lopez.
Was
it Jennifer Lopez? Yeah. I'm trying to think of some of his other ones, but I've always enjoyed them when I've watched them. So,
he picks and chooses. Oh, he did Magic Mike.
He did Sex, Lies, and Videotape, didn't he? That's on my list.
Not Sex, on my Lies, list. And Videotape?
It's on my list of 1,000.
That hasn't aged.
Hasn't aged?
No, it hasn't aged well. You're like, is this... Because any movie that comes out groundbreaking, I mean, they might still be good movies, but you'll be like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
It's like if you show a kid today Reservoir Dogs, they might think it's still awesome, but they'll be like, what was so exciting about that?
Yeah.
Oh, they changed the timeline around.
Yeah, exactly.
Criminals that talk about any normal everyday stuff.
Wear suits.
It's cool soundtrack. All right. Same old. But yeah, I mean, the movies that you chose, it's of all the ones I've got, that I've done so far, this is the one where apart from the Bond, and the ones that we even cut out. Mm.
So Bond's your one that you just can't connect to, and Ocean's 11 is your one. That's a bit.
No, boring. I love Ocean's 11. Yeah. Okay. But no, I just remember my mate saying that. Yeah. I always like to throw in. Yeah, that.
It's a bit like a guilty pleasure. I know it's a bit kind of.
No, I love
mainstream.
It.
But
if that was on TV, I'd watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. Just seeing my girl on this one, but
watching these movies late at night at home.
Yeah,
you don't get that full experience, and I reckon that adds, because I always do a rating on my movies, and I reckon that adds 1.5 out of 10 to any movies, just watching it in the movies.
It depends, I guess, what kind of movie.
Although, if you paid for it and it's really shit, you're like, no. Yeah. You're more likely to hate it more because you actually laid out good money for it.
If you paid for it and the people in the cinema are just being dicks and talking all the way through or just being annoying, then you hate it.
And you can't sort of, you've got to go to the loo and you leave and miss 10 minutes, whatever.
You can't pause it and come back later, watch it tomorrow.
Hang on, guys, I'm just going to the toilet.
I'm really tired. I've got kids. It's late.
I mean, that's one thing. I miss going to the movies. Because when you've got kids, you don't go as much.
Oh, no. It doesn't even compare.
Yeah. But, I guess that's what TV is.
We used to binge and go like 3 or 4 days in a row. But, that doesn't happen anymore. We don't want to finish on a downer. But we might.
No. Maybe we have to. Maybe you can cut things and intersperse time.
That time when we laughed before. Oh, it's been great.
Yeah. Best time ever. Best night.
Best night I've ever had. Gotta wrap it up. That's it.
Cool.